You. When I was 17, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for small town girls and soft summer nights. We'd hide from the lights on the village green. When I was 17, when I was 21, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for city girls who lived up the stair with all that perfumed hair. And it came undone when I was 21.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for the new WHFR Journal, local news and views. Good day, and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronick, and I'm here with you today so that we can talk about local issues, although there's a lot of big things happening nationally, not only the presidential election coming to its last month and a half conclusion, that, of course, will be voted on locally as well as, of course, everywhere else in the United States, we hope. And of course, the big financial crisis on Wall Street, which is not really any news to people who are, already suffering from the mortgage crisis. But we want to also have some discussion of that today. So I'll begin my show with just a couple of things that sort of locally spin off from in various ways that economic crisis. First of all, it was announced... It's in last Wednesday's paper, 2 days ago, Wednesday, September 17th, that I mentioned today as we're doing the show live. It is the 19th of September, Friday the 19th of September, for those that are date-challenged or listening to our podcast from WHFR.fm. So let me tell you that the Montgomery Ward redevelopment project, this is, of course, across from Dearborn City Hall at Schaefer Road and Michigan Avenue, the southeast corner of that intersection. Part of that project has been put on hold. And as the headline says in the Press and Guide, the story is also in the Dearborn Times Herald. You should read these for yourself in detail. But market, the bad investment crisis is affecting senior housing portion of Ward's redevelopment. Here's the story, as reported by Jason Carmel Davis at the Press and Guide. Redico LLC President and CEO Dale Wachowski Monday told the Dearborn City Council that financing isn't readily available for the senior housing component of the $60 million Montgomery Ward redevelopment project. With that, the council had to have yet another vote to approve yet another amendment. I think somebody is getting tired of all these votes and amendments and delays. Just the phrase chosen by the reporter here seems to indicate the tenor or the mood of the council. I trust that was true. They're getting a little frustrated. Yes, I'm joined in the studio by Ned Apigian, our WHFR staff member, host of the forum show on late rotation right now called Then and Now. And let's get his microphone turned up. You had a comment about that, Ned. Go ahead.
I didn't know how important the senior housing part of the project was.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a final stage or phase. It wasn't going to be built first.
Oh.
At this point, it's not going to be built at all. It can't be promised because they can't find the money for that. And that's it may happen later. I understand that banking institutions all around the world, in fact, are not giving loans even to extremely qualified other institutions, such as cities or big development companies, because they're a little scared of the money that they have to loan. One of the problems, as I understand it, is that these large investment banks were letting people borrow, and they were getting loans themselves on loans they already had out time and time again. By one report I have here, 20 to 30 times over. In other words, supposedly the collateral of somebody paying you back money over years for money you gave them, because you'd have that money in the future with interest, of course, which means you're going to have more money in the future, you can sell that collateral yourself over again and over again and over again and over again. And, of course, they can't possibly pay back all of the times that they sold these things. So it's very complex. I don't propose to understand, as John McCain says, he doesn't understand economics very well, or at least not as well as he knows about the military and being in prison for five and a half years. Certainly no disrespect, John, at all. But he has admitted that himself, and it's because it is extremely complex. And the only presidential candidates, as I mentioned on the show, that have talked about the economic situation of this country and the crisis to be, which is now, and maybe going to get worse, has been Ron Paul, Republican candidate for president, and interestingly, although they come from different, you might say, political philosophies, Ralph Nader.
How about Bob Barr?
And Bob Barr, of course, is a libertarian. Libertarian Party has said this for years and years and years,
right,
that we need a different systemic approach to this. But I've got Ralph Nader's point of view and some background on him in a few moments here. Let me just feature a little more on this about that senior housing here anyway, and how upset the council was having to do this. With that, of course, the council had to have another vote, and it did vote 5-1 with Council President Tom Tofelsky dissenting and Councilman Doug Thomas absent to the Redico redevelopment agreement that would extend the deadline for completion of the senior living complex to around 2013, 5 years away. So they're still in the plans. But since they can't get money right now, or maybe ever, they're going to they don't have to have it as completed as quickly.
Well, one way to know that, you know, MSHTA, the Michigan State Housing Authority, manages the house projects here in Michigan.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. So they're certainly not coming up with money. It's not their job, and they don't have any. But if HUD doesn't give you any money based on what's happening with the government, there just isn't any money to give for a thing like that. It may never happen.
Here's another spin. American House, which is the chain of independent senior living facilities that was up for discussion Monday night, will have about 95 one- and two-bedroom units available once that portion of the project is complete. So apparently they're building these units, which will then be subcontracted or managed by American House. And again, assisted living facilities, and they're basically there because the medical complex will be discharging some people, but they're going to need assisted living.
There's one in Dearborn Heights.
There's several around, yes. And by the way, the units will be priced, if you need this assisted living facility, between $2,200 and $2,400 a month.
Those things are not cheap.
No, of course, it's more than just an apartment. I mean, there are the assisted living things, people watching out for you, and some medical, get your pills to you, and so on. Also, retail and a parking structure will be housed on the same site. Eventually, we don't know about the deadline for that. Redico, this developer, must have the entire project finished by 2013 in order to receive a $9.6 million State of Michigan brownfield tax credit. This is according to Dearborn Council President Tefelsky. Tefelsky said, with all due respect, it doesn't seem like the market has changed that much since we first approved this back in May. It just seems like this is an ever-changing saga, which is why he voted against this. He doesn't think Redico or this, even the nature of this development, is the right thing for Dearborn. He's said so for months. It's interesting that the council president is almost the only one speaking out on this. I suspect Doug Thomas, who has not attended many of these meetings, who has always been against this kind of redevelopment and this project in particular, as well as the parking towers that are going basically unused in West Dearborn, he would have voted with Tefelsky, but it still wouldn't have been a majority, and maybe he's in his last term in office. He often said that that he stayed running for council in order to sort of be a balance for Mayor Guido. I mean, a nemesis, as Guido might see it, antagonistic factor, but in fact, to give balance to Guido's points of view when he was mayor. And it's always good to have many points of view clearly expressed, and Thomas was pretty good at that, even though he lost his cool a couple of times, but he was a good spokesperson for his point of view. And a couple of times, the people of Dearborn listened to him, and they, of course, elected him to council many times.
But, you know, getting a tax credit is not exactly money. It's money you don't have to spend.
Right.
But if Mr. Redco and his organization is looking to borrow money, that's the linchpin to see if this project goes ahead.
Right.
Most people don't use their own money to do anything. Mm-hmm. And if today, if you want to go buy a car and finance it and lease it, you're going to find they're going to be very, very stingy about giving you a loan. The only place you're going to get a loan nowadays easily is from the car companies who are sponsoring their own products and carrying your thing, carrying your loan.
And they'll probably be more careful about your ability to pay back too, of course. But
well, I was surprised. I was out pricing a car, and I wanted to find out what the payment was going to cost me. And they asked me a whole lot of questions. No one else did. They made me submit some paperwork, and I was rejected. I couldn't believe it. I was in disbelief.
Yeah, and Ned Epigging, by the way, folks, who's been on the show before, he's very humble, but his profession is that of architect and also consultant on urban planning. He has a master's degree in urban planning, and would you say you're semi-retired or just
I would say you're doing a little less work than before?
But
it all depends what I want to do it.
Sure.
Most of the time I have a lot of interests that take me out of town, and I was on the board of directors of a couple companies. Right. And
of course, I always
And my senior citizens building here in Dearborn.
Of course, I welcome your comments because of your intelligent and educated insights into situations here in Dearborn.
So beware. It's not that easy to borrow money. I was shocked myself, but I had no intention. I was just shopping to see what the price was. And nowadays, if you think you got a 5-star credit rating and it doesn't make any difference, the banks are not giving money.
Yeah, that's scary. Let me just do one more paragraph here so you understand the context of the basic medical project. Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly Jr., they leave the junior out now. His father has passed away.
His father passed away in the last six months.
And the former mayor.
I was thinking about how long he was out of office.
Right, yeah. But so maybe you can drop the junior if the senior, if you will, is no longer alive. I don't know. Anyway, the mayor, who's always been for the project and is trying to get it to happen, of course, better to get something happening that might be semi-secure than nothing is probably one way to look at it. But anyway, he said the funds for the 160,000 square foot medical office building portion of this Dearborn Town Center project. That's what they're calling it, Dearborn Town Center project. Jeez. Anyway,
I guess it's the center.
Well, but there's Fairlane Town Center, which is a total shopping mall, and this is going to be basically a medical facility, and they're both called town centers, and neither one of them is in center.
Should be a medical center, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, at least Fairlane Town Center is sort of in the center of Dearborn in terms of east-west.
Well, everybody knows where it is now.
Yeah, and so the city hall is on the east side of town, so it's not really a town center. It is a center of stuff, in this case, a medical facility. Anyway, he says that there has been financed by local banks that know the reputation of the company going into the site, which will also feature about 22,000 square feet of retail and office space. The facility will be occupied, as we said before, by Oakwood Healthcare System Facility, and the Midwest Healthcare Facility further north on Schaefer is moving down, has some operational relationship now with Oakwood. There's And so they're leaving. They're vacating.
They're in the shopping center.
Yeah, they're in the, well, they were storefront sort of right along Schaefer there on the east side of Schaefer, further north, just a couple blocks north from this. And they're relocating. Why, I don't know, but, it, you know, location is everything. And so maybe they get more business this way. But in any event, we have another vacant area there on Schaefer as soon as they move into the new one.
But doesn't Oakwood Hospital already have an assisted living?
Well, this is going to be a medical care facility, and the assisted living part is only a small little add-on.
Well, that's what they do on Rotunda now. You just graduate from assisted.
Well, I thought that Oakwood, per se, had some facility on Michigan Avenue at Military. I may be wrong about that. It's the old department store.
Right, the children's store. What was their name?
Well, no, it wasn't Jacobson's. It was, everybody knows who's listening. I'm sorry. I even shopped there. I used to buy some of my my shirts there. It was a general department store.
It was a famous children's store.
They had departments for everybody.
There was a big section now. Why can't I think of its name?
Well, if it pops up, don't worry about calling, folks. We're too busy here. And in the background, you may actually hear some piano music. They're tuning our piano in our performance studio. Yeah, our Studio J, as it's called.
And named after Jay.
That's what they tell me. But it's lovely, except it's tuning, so it's not really a tune, so it's a little distracting. If you can't hear it, fine. I just thought you'd like to know what technical difficulties. But the guy's doing a great job, and we always like to keep our facility running as well as we can. So anyway, O'Reilly added also that banks aren't as quick to dole out funds for speculative projects, especially ones like senior housing project that can't be pre-leased and filled prior to construction. I guess seniors die too quickly to guarantee any. I can't believe that.
Not at that price range.
Well, yeah, only a few people could afford that, and they don't want to put their money out now for something that's not going to be built for 5 years.
You could go to an Erickson project like Henry Ford, the Henry Ford Village project on Ford Road in Greenfield.
Yeah. Anyway, O'Reilly said that 80% of this project, just to be clear, will be completed by June 2010. So that's less than 2 years away, folks. So, although they still haven't gotten the Montgomery Ward building down yet.
That won't take long. It takes longer to build something.
Well, it looks like it was reinforced concrete. You know, they really, really built it well. You know, they really built it well. We have a phone caller coming in.
That's a standard building they have all over the country.
Let me take this just for the
Why
heck
not?
Of it. So you keep talking, then.
Well, we're going to get an interesting comment from one of our listeners, and hopefully we'll be able to share it with you. They may have a solution to one or two of our problems. They may know something that we don't know and have some insight. But there's always the danger that they don't have any insight into anything we're talking about. Jay, was that somebody that had some insight into our problems?
No.
Yeah, it was a general question. What was the phone number to the liberal arts department?
Well, something like that. But no, we are expecting a phone call at about 1:45 or thereabouts,
or
just to mention to our, a special phone interview from a UFO investigator. A UFO researcher from right here in Michigan. In fact, he is the state director of Michigan MUFON, which is the state chapter of the largest international organization in the world that privately has to investigate and tabulate reports about flying saucers, because especially in the U.S., you know, our government doesn't do that. At least they say they don't do it. Somebody should keep track of this. So we'll get actually the UFO report, the Michigan UFO report from the last few months, the last year here in Michigan from the state director of MUFON. So we expect his call in about a half an hour, about 1:45. This is Space Week here at WHFR.
That's the significance.
That's right. For sure.
Space Week.
That means that every show, including our talk show, has to somehow involve a theme of space, whether it's outer space, inner space, closet space, whatever. We are just having fun with it, that's why in the songs that concluded the big band show, I tossed in "Fly Me to the Moon" by Frank Sinatra, of course.
That was absolutely appropriate. How many more are there like that?
Space songs?
No, yeah, "Fly Me to the Moon."
There's quite a few that relate in some way
to the moon,
cosmic things, and the moon and Saturn and, you know, the planets and the galaxies and who knows. So have fun with this. That's going to continue through tomorrow night, folks. It's called Space Week, and it's just a thematic week in which our music and talk shows try to all connect with the same theme and just try to have fun with it. See how many varieties or variations there are of that kind of information.
Supposedly, Columbus saw spaceships on his voyage just before they discovered land in 1492.
Yeah.
Though, what do they call the ones that go into the water and come out? And the lights? He had documented that in his ship log, and it was very interesting. Because where on earth would lights have come from in those times?
It's quite clear that there was a natural phenomenon that could have done what Columbus had observed at that point.
Right.
And exactly what it is, of course, and I'm a skeptic in the sense of we don't have hard evidence about what any of these things are.
And we're getting close to October 12th, isn't it?
Yeah. We do have hard evidence of what's October 12th, Ned?
I thought it was Columbus Day.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. But we do have hard evidence about the number of reports that can't be identified and explained by natural phenomenon of any sort. Okay. As I said, our special phone guest in the last quarter of this hour is going to do that. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Oh, that's us, even in outer space. We can make our own kinds of radio waves, I guess.
Inner wave, yes. Inner space, too. Right.
So let's see, a couple of positive things about local business real quick. Severstal, which is the Russian company. Hey, Russia has plenty of money. The Russian steel company, they're considering investing an additional $1 billion in the Ruzhe steel plant that they currently, of course, own. So that's really great, an additional $1 billion. And, of course, currently it manufactures steel for use in Ford vehicles. Now, it's interesting to me that Ford had to sell that plant because they couldn't functionally operate it.
Well, wasn't McLeod Steel, that wasn't it?
No, Ford has it at its own steel plant.
That's right, in the Rouge, right.
Yeah, right. I don't know what happened to McLeod's, whether it's part of this business or not.
No, it's not a Japanese company bought McLeod's.
Anyway, Rouge is owned by Severstal, of course, Dearborn gave them a great tax incentive, too.
That's what everybody
does. And the Russian company had plenty of extra money to do additional development of the land and the facility. Ford, I guess, didn't have the dollars to do the upgrades needed to make it a modern and therefore efficient and therefore profit-making steel factory. So
last I looked, Ford stock was $5-6. I don't know what happened to it recently.
Yeah, it's GM is down to 9 or 10, I think. So
and Ford must be what?
GM was up at
30.
No, 90 or 100 several months ago.
I know, but recently.
Yeah. Well, recently, yeah. Every bit.
So it's down to 9?
Lord, yeah, yeah. Is that your investment plan?
No.
Okay, good. Severstal is also considering 4 other recently acquired steel plants as possible targets for the investment. Labor negotiations underway at 3 of them will require capital commitments that will compete with Dearborn opportunities. If Dearborn is tabbed for the cash influx, it would mean a comprehensive retooling of the Rouge plant, replacing antiquated machines with the latest equipment. The renovations, though, would not necessarily mean job growth. Mayor John B. O'Reilly junior in this case, said it's definitely maintaining the jobs and then there would be some growth. But what we're seeing in all manufacturing is a shift towards automated machines that are doing the majority of the labor. So it's great that the money's coming in, but unfortunately it's not going to have more jobs there in that case.
That's the nature of the new economy. Mm-hmm. They're more efficient. It's new machinery, and you have to learn how to operate it. It's not
obviously more robots, fewer human beings are needed. There was a presentation, it was called the Inforum Luncheon here in Dearborn. The luncheon at the Ford Conference and Event Center on Village Drive across from Henry Ford Museum was hosted by Inforum, Michigan's largest professional women's organization. That's right. Women's organization, excuse me. The former Detroit Women's Economic Club has become a strong force, providing workshops and forums to help advance the role of women leaders in Southeast Michigan in general. It was an interesting talk. This is according to Tim Powers, who's editor of the Press and Guide, right? He said, not only because, and who was the main speaker? Alan Mulally, who's the president and CEO of Ford Motor Company. Right. Now, of course, formerly he was with
Boeing.
Boeing, yes. Yeah, the Chrysler CEO was formerly with, like, Home Depot or something, which scares me to think.
Well, that's different. They own...
Right, but their CEO is the guy they brought in from Home Depot.
Oh, from Home Depot to run
CEO.
Chrysler?
Right, yeah. So, Mulally, even his background is not directly car-related. But anyway, he gave a great spirited presentation about the city's turnaround effort and the Welcome Home Dearborn campaign, and... the article mentioned, Tim Powers says, Dearborn and Ford are linked so closely economically that if the company gets a cold, the city catches pneumonia. I guess you've heard that metaphor before.
For other people.
Yeah, but Mulally had good stories about his shopping experiences in Dearborn and the surprise on the part of a resident who thought the CEO of Ford should have someone to do his shopping for him. But on the Ford front, what Mulally had to say made good sense. He noted that everyone in the United States and now the world are dealing with the R-word, recession. This was, again, not this week, folks, last week. I don't think there's any doubt about recession here, folks. Even on all the conservative news channels, they're all saying recession now. There's no doubt about it.
You know what the classic definition of a recession is? No growth for two periods.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And you want to know something? I don't think that's hard to meet.
I think 2 quarters, 6 months.
Yeah, 2 quarters.
Yeah. In addition, Mulally said the auto industry is faced with a structural change that has resulted in new ways of doing business. Right, outsourcing and so on, he probably applies. So that's a little crazy because the headline of the story is there, Mulally is optimistic about the economy and business. So he's out of touch. Another out of touch CEO.
Does anybody know what the auto industry wants to do with $25 billion? And how are they going to divide it? And what are they going to study? Anybody hear anything about that?
Theoretically, in general, it's for their research and development towards the production, as soon as possible, of alternative energy vehicles that they hadn't started working on yet.
How about a battery, which we don't make here, and it's only made in Asia?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we need to make our own batteries, and there's only one company in the U.S. that can make lithium batteries that even the GM Volt could use. And that's scary in that we'll be even more dependent upon the outside, the countries outside the United States for our technology and our technology products. Just because Mulally came up and it's a CEO, here I'd like to play for you comment this week from Jim Hightower about CEOs. And it's probably over obvious, but we always like Jim Hightower's spirit and his articulateness on these specific issues. So take a listen. This is our word for the day, thought for the day from Jim Hightower.
We're always quoting him.
However relevant.
CEOs insist that they are upright citizens who always play by the rules. However, what they hope you don't realize is that, one, they mostly write the rules that govern their own behavior. Two, those rules are so loosely written that they hardly amount to rules at all. And 3, even when they don't obey the rules, nothing of consequence happens to them. 4-year-olds everywhere would love to play in this world. Take the matter of shareholder anger over the extravagant bonuses CEOs get, even when the corporation does poorly. To pacify critics, the Securities and Exchange Commission wrote a new rule 2 years ago requiring corporations to set and publish performance targets that executives must achieve in order to get bonuses that can add up to tens of millions of dollars for the head honcho. Good idea. How's that rule working, you ask? Mostly, not at all. You see, the SEC has become more protective of CEOs than shareholders, so it punched in a little loophole that lets executives keep their performance targets a secret from everyone. A recent survey by a management firm found that less than half of medium-sized corporations are even bothering to comply with the agency's disclosure rule, and less than 30% of large corporations are in compliance. But it turns out that even those who do comply are playing games with the ethical intent of the rule. Since the SEC provided no standard for performance targets, CEOs are able to write their own. And, big surprise, they're setting targets that are easy to hit, guaranteeing they'll get their fat payouts. As the survey's author reports, they are not really earning the bonuses because the goals are being set so low. This is Jim Hightower saying, angry shareholders have got it exactly right. When CEOs flout disclosure rules about the basis of their pay, that means they've got something to hide.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
I love the title of Jim Hightower's book, Even a Dead Fish Can... go with the current. So, don't be a dead fish, folks. His book is a citizen's activist manual, and I'm not recommending you buy it, but I'm saying something if you want to find out more about what you can do as an average person. You can look at Jim Hightower's book. Last week I had Mike's Election Guide 2008 from Michael Moore. That's a new paperback on the stands, analyzing Democratic and the Republican candidates for president, but he talks about citizen participation and how you can make a difference, and that's a good little book too. But Jim Hightower is a very entertaining reader. Ned,
I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, just came out. I didn't bring it with me this week to show you, but Mike's Election Guide 2008 is Michael Moore's book, and very entertaining, but also a lot of great information and data. Last week I mentioned, because we featured a segment of the first in a lifetime press conference between third party candidates for president. All four of the major third parties and Ron Paul, who is not running for presidential candidate at this point, since
with
he didn't,
themselves.
Yeah, with
between
all themselves. Together and their collective press conference for that hour, and I only featured about 10 minutes of it, was to say that the two main parties don't have the answers for the problems we're facing today. And they're basically saying, you can vote for any one of us you want to, but don't vote for either the Democrat or the Republican. And that's never happened before, to my knowledge. And, of course, one thing that really incensed all of them was that everyone, including Ralph Nader, who is polling 6% or more, and it will be on 45 state ballots, including Michigan, for president this fall in just a month and a half. He was denied access to the debates, to be a debater, to have equal status, even though he's polling very well.
With these guys, he was denied?
With the Democrats and Republicans, committee that controls who gets into the debates.
Right.
So guess what? They don't want to have anybody except themselves in it, because if you give people a TV time, people might hear what they have to say, and oh my gosh, a few of them might believe it, might understand it. Ralph Nader, okay, get this. This is from his website a couple days ago. And by the way, in terms of systemic change, as I said last week, only Ralph Nader and Ron Paul, out of all those candidates, and Bob Barr, the Libertarian candidate, as we said earlier, agreed that there's a big financial crisis happening. And you say, well, it's easy last week even to sort of predict that. in a letter to Congress on July 23rd, 2008, and I have the whole letter here, too, which you can get from Nader's website. This is July of this year. July. Ralph Nader warned that the federal government's bank insurance fund may be insufficient to handle the developing crisis in the banking industry. And the day after he sent out his warning to congressmen, he was ridiculed in Congress. One member, Spencer Baucus, at a congressional hearing. I wonder if Baucus drinks very much. Okay, it's a bad Greek joke.
Only wine. Only wine.
Oh, of course, only wine. Yeah. Only. Mentioned Ralph's letter and said, point blank, our banks are well capitalized. Our deposit insurance fund is sound. There's absolutely no factual basis for saying there's not money there to pay, unquote.
Oh, those yes. are not the banks. They are the investment banks.
This is one of our congressmen, right. though. Yeah. Fast forward to September 17th. That was Tuesday, less than 2 months after Ralph sent his letter. And now we have an Associated Press story. This is from, again, I'm reading from Nader's press release here, featuring prominently right now on the Drudge Report, Matt Drudge, who's always curmudgeon, corruption muckraker, at least as he sees it, but usually a conservative. Anyway, his headline was Federal Bank Insurance Fund Dwindling. That was on September 17th. And if Drudge would say that, you know it's bad. If the conservative muckrakers are saying that there's a problem, there is a really bad problem. And here's the opening sentence from the AP report from the 18th. Banks are not the only ones struggling in the growing financial crisis. The fund established to insure their deposits is also feeling the pinch, and the taxpayer may be the lender of last resort. And, of course, that's the way it's even going now. The reality, the article goes on, not the article, but Nader goes on, is that the Democrats and Republicans have screwed up royally. You know, last night on TV, I don't know if you saw any of the TV news channels, Ned, last night, but, all the liberals were blaming the Republicans for deregulation, including Clinton, who did some deregulation when he was president.
Started with Reagan.
Right. And yet, who had the power in the House and the Senate? Now, they didn't have the presidency, so bills could be vetoed if they couldn't pull their troops together to get the right majorities. But it was the Democrats for the last 2 years that didn't make any significant efforts to solve this problem either.
They knew they didn't have the votes. They need 60%.
And it might look bad or something if they lose when they try things. As Nader said, the big corporations said weak regulation, weak law, and order for corporations. That's what the big corporations have done. Nader's number one enemy, as he sees it, are the big corporations and their influence on our society today.
Something about we the people or we the corporations.
And he says the Democrats and Republicans delivered for their corporate paymasters. The rest of us, taxpayers and workers alike, now suffer the consequences through either increased taxes, lost jobs, or both. And so if you want to know more about Ralph Nader's point of view, of course, all these candidates have websites. Nader's website is full of information. I'd like Barack's and McCain's and so on, but since he can't get equal time from our official debates, maybe you need to find out more yourself. Go to votenader.org. Are your retirement investments fairly secure without going into details, Ned, right now?
Actually, I don't even have such things. My wife does. I told her today, stop investing and stop putting money in your 401k. Pay the tax on it and put it in the bank.
I guess it depends who's managing it. Half of my retirement annuities are with AIG. They bought out a company called Valic a few years ago. So I'm happy. I have to say, I'm happy of the government bailout of the insurance system of AIG. But I found out that...
I thought it didn't include the shareholders.
That's right. All the shareholders, that is the people that have bought. No, I didn't buy stock in AIG.
Oh, I see.
My annuity insurance is with them. And so, of course, they were the ones managing the investment, sort of a mutual fund portfolio. But that is secured now for anybody that's got a Valic or a AIG Valic insurance portfolio. But all the people that bought stock in AIG, because it's definitely one of the largest companies in the world
Nobody knew much about AIG. They know Prudential. They know Metropolitan.
They've done a lot of ads on TV and direct mail for their insurance. their car insurance, for example.
Yeah.
And they have some tie with AARP because AARP always says
promoting him.
Yeah, investigate AIG cost and so on. I investigated. It wasn't any cheaper than what I got locally, but from AAA, in fact.
You know what I find out is cheaper? If you'd use AAA and you have automatic deductions from your checking account monthly, you save about a third on your...
They actually have a number of different insurance companies doing insurance, and the one I'm in now happens to rate my premium, and it is monthly deductions, too, but they rate it based on my credit rating. Well, I've got a really good credit rating, not that I can get a new loan, but so my auto insurance is especially reduced because of my credit rating. You have to go in and ask. I can't remember what the name of that company. But always ask AAA, because it's not just one AAA insurance policy. There's many different policies.
And if you join them, a home and a car, you save a lot of money that way,
too. That's almost always the case with most policies, but that's true.
All I remember was when a friend of mine told me about that. We opened up an account in the credit union, which did business with them, and our car insurance went down about 30%.
Yeah.
Just because you're guaranteeing their money automatically. And, I guess a lot of people don't pay their bills on time.
Right. In watching Glenn Beck's show, and this is CNN Headline News Channel, and he has an hour-long news show every night. It's repeated twice. I think it's 7 and 9, the same hour. He was talking about the government bailout, and, of course, since he's a conservative or libertarian, he had Ron Paul on for a segment talking about this crisis that Ron Paul very accurately saw years ago, as most libertarians did, and Ron, again, Ralph Nader, too. He said this is like moving beyond socialism to totalitarianism for the government to be this involved.
With corporations.
Not only do we have a Federal Reserve System, now we are the protector of all the corporations, but only the big corporations that go belly up because of bad business practices. And I have in front of me an editorial from Amy Goodman, who is the host of the show Democracy Now!, which is featured Monday through Friday.
The so-called socialist.
Well, right. She's called that by other people. She's a progressive liberal, I think,
right.
She would admit to herself.
Right.
But if you want to catch Amy's news show, and it is not just Amy, but many other reporters, it is every night, I believe, from 8 to 9 o'clock on WDET. Our other non-commercial significant medium in Detroit, 101.9. So you can catch Amy Goodman that way. But here's her editorial comment.
They have less music now. We have more music.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's entitled Wall Street Socialist. I'm just going to summarize this. She's saying taxpayers should be in the driver's seat now. So, you know, if she's calling Wall Street Socialists, then she is called a socialist by, you know, people like Glenn Beck, then it's got to be really bad. Maybe it is close to inappropriate, almost dictatorship in one central power by our federal government. I mean, Glenn Beck was practically crying last night that he saw our country becoming totalitarian.
Did he really cry when he found out they don't have any money? They got to borrow the money from China?
Well, he's been berating our debt to China for weeks and weeks, and he has other spokespeople on that show. One wrote a book, the movie from this group is called I Owe USA, and it just came out on DVD. And it's the same people that he had on last night and have written a book, I think it's called Crisis Exposed USA or whatever, about the financial crisis. And these books have been out for months that specifically predicted exactly what we have now, and he's had them on his show. So maybe even if you don't agree with Glenn Beck on many things, and he does tend to go over the edge and cry and, you know, really he's engendering fear and trembling in the public. But it's very sensational. His ratings are quite high whenever you do that. But it is the tendency of all governments, even democratic ones, to move towards totalitarianism. Now, take a political science class, folks. It's basic poli-sci 131. The people in power at the top always want more power, supposedly for the good of the people. Ever hear the phrase benevolent despot? That's where you got a dictator, but you're happy to have him because he makes the trains run on time. That's what
Mussolini
they said about Mussolini in the in the 1930s. People had no freedoms, no rights. Everything was decided at the top by Mussolini, but he made the trains run on time. That's not a good trade-off, folks. Adolf Hitler was democratically elected and then appointed chancellor for life because, oh, everybody loved him, a single strong man to do good things for everybody. And I think he got them into World War II on some sort of, you know, control the world plan. And also, of course, that's a little Holocaust thing.
The
about
Poles
six,
attacked
the
radio
6 million
station on
Jews.
The German border.
Yeah.
And that was their excuse to attack Poland.
Yeah. I mean, any excuse there. I mean, shame on them for attacking a radio station.
Yes.
And, of course, he moved in Czechoslovakia to unite the German homeland. I didn't know that many.
Sudetenland.
I didn't know many Germans came from, Western the Czech Republic area. But
well, as you divide up those from the First World War, as they created these countries, they had people of various ethnic groups finding themselves in a... That's the present problem that you have in Georgia today.
Right. As you pointed out on your last Then and Now show, the complex situation there is that the U.S. government has been supporting this, almost like a dictator, this, I guess, democratically elected head of Georgia, and I can't, Veselyov or something. And
Shakashvili, I think.
Shakashvili, okay. And you would know how to do that. But I think you and the information you presented very clearly, it took an hour to get it out, and there's more background, is that we've made totally the wrong choices there. And I think your shows have also pointed out in detail from intelligent college professors who've done years and years of research and study, not only on the current situation, but the historic roots of these situations, is that we've made the wrong decision in almost every case in terms of what we've done in the Middle East with the so-called Jewish problem or the Muslim problem or what have you, and including, backing, I think, or even...
Even the Shah of Iran's problem.
Causing Russia to do this. I mean, there's some say that we instigated, we set up a situation to get Russia to invade Georgia. So, yes, it's time for, I think, our guest from Michigan MUFON. Let me answer the phone.
Yes.
And Ned, I'm sure you're going to be excited here.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm always interested in something new. But let's hope it's him and not someone else.
Bill. Okay, let me put you on the air right now.
And we do have our guest on the telephone, and in about a second or two, Jay's going to turn him live onto our board. And I think he's there now.
That's the idea.
That's it.
Okay. Do I have Bill on the phone?
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Bill. Glad to meet you by telephone here today. I just saw you last Sunday at the Michigan MUFON meeting. First of all, I have told our listeners already that I believe your title is State Director of Michigan MUFON. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, very prestigious title. But what is, briefly, tell our listeners what is MUFON and how is it that Michigan MUFON is part of that? Go ahead.
MUFON, or the Mutual UFO Network, for which it's an acronym, is a group that of a civilian group, actually the largest civilian UFO research group in the world. We collect UFO sighting cases, go out, and to the best of our ability, document any data from the sighting that we can, and keep a database where we can reference it in terms of looking at trends of UFO activity over the years. We've been around since 1969, MUFON has. Michigan's chapter of MUFON has been around since about 1980. MUFON mm-hmm. International right now has about 3,000 members. The state organization has about 100 members. So what happens, folks see a UFO, they go to our website, MUFON.com, report the UFO, and by filling out an online form. After they fill out the online form, one of our investigators gets in touch with them, with the witness, maybe by email, by phone. However the witness wants to be contacted, generally we're agreeable.
Mm-hmm. And typically, who are the members of Michigan MUFON? Can you sort of identify the type of people, the backgrounds, and who are the investigators that are sent out exactly?
Well, we're a pretty diverse group. The thing about the UFO mystery is that it isn't just isolated to people who like to watch the X-Files, let's say. Mm. You know, anybody out there who sees a UFO, generally, it changes their whole worldview, even if they weren't a believer before. So we have members come in from people join our organization from all, you know, walks of life. Those who choose to do the investigations, do the investigator route, are generally people who are committed to you know, getting hands-on, hearing other people's sightings, cataloging them, documenting them. It doesn't really take a degree to be able to help out the organization, although we certainly do have many people with doctoral degrees in the organization that mm-hmm. help us review the information.
And there is training involved of sorts. There's a test to take, right, for an investigator?
Yeah, absolutely. If somebody becomes a member of a MUFON and they go through the field investigator training, which entails picking up a copy of the field investigator's guide, pouring through it, in Michigan's chapter here, we're fortunate enough to be able to offer field investigator training at our meetings. We meet 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. And during this training, you know, we help people prepare for the test that comes packaged with the book. And once somebody passes the exam, they are available to actually go out and investigate UFO cases themselves. So if it's something somebody out there always wanted to do, investigate UFO cases, didn't really know where to start, well, you know, come knocking on our door.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is, I thought it was, since I attended the Michigan MUFON meeting last Sunday, which was held in beautiful Flint, Michigan, not too far away from here. I've got to keep business flowing to Flint, Michigan somehow, I guess. You gave a summary of the sort of the report of how many sightings are actually investigated by Michigan MUFON. I mean, certainly there could be more sightings than this that aren't reported and therefore don't get investigated. But give me the sort of the statistics for either the last several months or the last year.
Last year in 2007, Michigan MUFON had reported to us. It was, I believe, it was either 82 or 86 sightings, somewhere in the 80 range, and that was for the whole year. For 2008 alone, going into September, we already had over 100 sightings reported to us, mm-hmm. just in Michigan. And what I see that as is indicative of is not the fact that more UFO sightings are occurring. It's just that people are more active on the internet and are more open to actually reporting their sightings. Mm-hmm. We do an excellent job of during our MUFON's last fiscal year. We actually reported we investigated 101 out of the 107 sightings given to us. Now our fiscal year overlaps 2007 and 2008 a little. That's the reason mm-hmm. for the number, but I won't confuse people with stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we have been doing an excellent job investigating just about every case that comes to us and been hearing a lot of very fascinating sightings come into us too.
Can you give us an example of one or two from the last couple of months that are especially unexplainable as natural phenomenon, let's say?
Yeah, how many are disqualified?
Yeah. By the way, I have my other co-host here is one of our WHO4 volunteers, Ned Apigian. So he's just, I didn't turn his microphone up very loud there, so I'm not sure Bill heard
so
that.
So if they had 101, do they qualify 80 as, okay. or are they discarded 20?
Right. How many of that 100 or so, Bill, are you able to sort them out as natural phenomena, therefore identified or still unexplainable?
Sure, that's an excellent question. in terms of the number that we had reported to us, the vast majority of them, and to some degree I'll say this is unfortunate, falls under the category of insufficient data.
Hmm.
People will report their sightings to us, and what I mean by insufficient data is it could be an identified flying object, though unlikely is what I would say about most of the cases that have been falling into insufficient data.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I believe, would be fully unexplainable, except the biggest barrier we tend to have is people love to report their sightings to us. Some of those who report their sightings to us are open to have long discussions with us about it and in some cases have somebody come out to investigate it, that type of thing. They're anxious to share their information, and thank you so much, for any witness, for doing that.
Of course.
In terms of follow-up, a lot of people have busy schedules, don't want to bother, aren't available, things like that. And so we have them, under the category of insufficient data. We do our best to investigate them. But when you have somebody who says that they, saw a dazzling array of lights that took on several shapes, they don't indicate what the shapes are. We don't see any sketches or pictures from them in the follow-up. Although we'd like to say, yeah, this is so strange, this is a UFO, this is an unidentified flying object, mm-hmm. We don't know if when we start seeing these shapes, in the sketches, for example, and I'm only using one theoretical, case out of this, that maybe we'd look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's the kind of thing that you see flashing on the side of the Sanyo blimp or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's good to report if you have seen something that you can't identify that you think looks a little unusual in the sky to Michigan MUFON, and they can get to the report site through MUFON.org, or would you recommend they go to the national site, which is actually MUFON.com?
In terms of looking at the sighting information, I'd recommend MUFON.com because Michigan's chapter forwards its data to that site, just like all the other sites.
Sure, they have the big database, finally. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And if you're interested in finding more about the state organization, including coming to our meetings in Flint, the local site is definitely the place to go to get connected locally.
Mm-hmm. Tell us just maybe one of the most recent sightings and that you feel is can be identified as unexplainable, unidentified therefore, but unexplainable. And actually there is significant data to say to conclude that.
The hottest one, and I'm going to pick on one that just happened a couple weeks ago, last week of August. There was a gentleman over the course of several nights, I believe it was 4 out of 5 nights, one of our investigators is still looking into this, saw a vehicle, several vehicles, for hours at a time over Chelsea, Michigan, in the middle of the night. He was generally seeing them somewhere between the midnight to 2 a.m. hour. And he would see varying displays of light, red, yellow, white, green, flashing lights at the top, in the middle, at the bottom. It would blink out. It would reappear somewhere. It would zip across the sky and make several just dazzling maneuvers impossible for people to, in any known aircraft, to make. His most interesting view of the object is one sort of tilted on its side, and he saw that it was actual several concentric rings of colored lights, at which he estimated to be over a mile in size. We're still looking to sort of double check that, that size estimate.
Wow.
But in any case,
that's
very
big.
Large.
Yeah. Now, was it just a one-person witnessed report?
His wife also saw the object.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, she just kind of said, she admitted that it was pretty strange, but she just wasn't ready for anything like that and went back in the house.
Okay. Was there any other sort of corroboration for what they saw?
Still looking into that. Again, it was just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we hate to just rush out and say, make some sort of conclusion and before we can get to any sort of in-depth investigation. But at this point, so far, it's got us pretty excited. And he also took some pictures of it that we've yet to see developed.
Okay. Oh, photographs, not digital stuff.
Correct. Yeah. Actually, you got to take it to the store, get it developed.
Yeah. Well, that's usually easier to prove whether it was with video. Sometimes it's hard to tell if it was faked on a computer or something. But that'll be interesting to follow that. So. Great job, Bill. Just finally, we have only about 2 minutes left here in our interview time. Maybe some of our listeners happened to catch the ABC TV recent special called Seeing is Believing. I believe they did a special with Peter Jennings a year or two ago that also had the same title. This was shown this Tuesday evening, 9:30 to 11 p.m. If you caught it, and I suspect you might might have wanted to caught it because you were in it briefly, flashes there, and you were in the first ABC special, in fact, yourself. And folks, this is Bill Congolese, who's the state director of Michigan MUFON that we're talking to right here in Michigan. So tell us what you thought briefly about that special, and did it do a good job, or was it lacking in something, or was it all crazy, or what did you feel about it?
I felt really, really good about the program in general. They did have debunkers on, people who were very anxious to down the phenomena, any possibility that there's any sort of anomalous nature to the phenomena. But I thought that they came across as the debunkers as not very credible themselves. So I thought it was an excellent program and giving somebody a sort of a general overview of the topic. Now, one thing I really have to say about this special that I thought was just great was, again, this is a sequel to one I played 4 years ago.
It was 4 years ago. Okay, yeah.
4 years ago, the sponsors for the program, when you went to commercial, they were literally commercials for spatulas in prime time because nobody would touch the subject.
Yeah.
And on this last week's show, both presidential candidates had commercials during the program. As well as all the car companies and everything. So I think it's gone a long way to being more
so they
respected
thought they didn't want to, yeah, they didn't think it would be a sort of a negative association to have their commercial in the midst of a UFO special. So
whoever in their campaigns arranged there to be commercials during this special, you know, way to go.
And at the very beginning of that, I'm hoping it is rerun, or maybe you can go to an ABC TV website to see this, or some other website out there on the internet. I just discovered a Hulu.com, HULU.com, which has episodes of dramatic TV shows, and they just insert new commercials, not many, but maybe they'll be able to see this some other way on the internet. But at the very beginning, the new information was the Stephenville, Texas UFO sightings. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is in the vicinity of Crawford, Texas. That happened just this last January, January 8th this year. And now, as reported in the Michigan MUFON newsletter, too, there's radar evidence that we had to struggle to get through the Freedom of Information Act that says there were unidentified flying objects there. They couldn't be explained. They were chased by F-16s, and the F-16 fighters couldn't even get to them. So very exciting stuff, and it's just something that we should be aware of. Don't want to add to fear and trembling of the economic markets here, but we need to find out what's going on in many places, in many ways. And I commend MUFON and your leadership in Michigan MUFON to continue to try to get at something close to the truth. So thanks for being with us today on the new WHFR Journal, Bill.
Thanks
and
much, Jay.
Good luck to you out there. And just repeat finally to our listeners that the website for the state chapter is MIMUFON.org, and the national website that they're a part of is MUFON.com, MUFON. So thanks again for your call, Bill.
Thanks again, Jay.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
So we have to say goodbye now, and to Ned Apigian, too. Thank you for sitting in today, Ned.
It's always a pleasure.
Okay. I hope your retirement investments of your wife hang in there.
I asked her about that. What's your stuff in?
Yeah. And I hope AIG at least can fulfill my annuity contribution somehow, or I'm kind of back to work. Yeah, back to work full time. No, they won't let me do that.
You got to go to Walmart's, that's it.
Yeah, that's right, be a greeter.
Be a greeter.
Yeah, well, I'm glad there's at least some job left there for us seniors. So thanks for listening, folks. The new edition of Highway 61 is coming right up with Joanne Korczynska. Thanks for listening. WHFR Dearborn.
WHFR is having a blues